Welcome to the Freedom to Rise podcast, a production of United Way Suncoast. Here's your host, Bronwyn Batal.
The Tampa Bay region is booming. We're number one in attracting new residents when compared to like-sized cities and among the national leaders in business startups. The Tampa Bay region is struggling. Families face an increasing financial strain, and childcare and housing affordability continue to be a challenge. So which is it? On this episode of the Freedom to Rise podcast, we'll explore that question and take a deeper dive into the data that sheds light on the pros and cons of life in our region. But first, here's a message from United Way Suncoast.
United Way Suncoast works to convene outreach efforts for business and civic groups and individuals throughout the year. But its volunteer collaborations culminate during April. This year, we again invite the community to celebrate United Way Suncoast's annual Week of Caring from April 22nd to April 26th as part of Global Volunteer Month. Global Volunteer Month celebrates the power of people who tackle society's greatest challenges and build stronger, more vibrant communities through volunteerism and everyday actions. Dozens of nonprofits throughout our region seek volunteers to support their meaningful projects. Week of Caring aligns those opportunities with United Way Suncoast's focus areas: education, financial stability, and support services. We welcome corporate employees, civic groups, and interested individuals to participate in this impactful community week of service through either in-person, virtual, or remote opportunities. To learn more, visit UnitedWaySuncoast.org. And as always, remember, united we rise, united we win.
Every year, the Tampa Bay Partnership, together with United Way Suncoast and the Community Foundation of Tampa Bay, produces the Regional Competitiveness Report. It's a data-based assessment of Tampa Bay's strengths and weaknesses across a diverse set of indicators that measure our region's performance against 19 benchmark communities nationwide. The 2024 Regional Competitiveness Report centers on the phrase, "the allure of sunshine." It celebrates the attractiveness of the region while exploring how the changes to supply and demand influence Tampa Bay's housing market, transportation, and workforce recruitment and retention. Joining us to talk more about the Regional Competitiveness Report is someone who knows all about the allure of sunshine. She enjoys paddleboarding and hiking, so she's quite familiar with the outdoors. But as the Senior Director of Research, Analytics, and Public Policy at the Tampa Bay Partnership, she knows the numbers are not all adding up to a complete positive for the region. Dr. Lucia Ferris, we're pleased to have you as a guest on the Freedom to Rise podcast. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. Thank you so much. You clearly have a passion for tracking and aggregating economic data. What drives your interest in the topic?
I think at the end of the day, what we want is research that can be actionable. Mm-hmm. And so when the research really speaks to the issues that all of us are facing in the Tampa Bay area, we do look to the research to be that foundation from which we're going to take action. And some of our issues are so interconnected, not only with each other, but they are regional in nature. And so we do have to find commonality in how to address these issues rooted in the data. And so I think every day that I wake up to do the research and to do the work that guides some of the solutions that we could potentially consider, it is because we believe that the data is telling the story of where we are and where we can go.
That's wonderful. Finding commonalities rooted in data, because data does tell a good story, right? We opened with some thoughts about the contrasting findings of the 2024 report. It's an influx of new talent and families, which stimulates the local economy, but it's also an increased demand for resources and greater pressure on our limited supply of housing and higher costs of living overall. Can you tell us more about these contrasts and what they mean for our communities moving forward?
Yes, absolutely. So really, first and foremost, as you said, Bronwyn, the Tampa Bay region remains incredibly attractive. So Tampa Bay, once again, ranks first in net migration. In addition, we climbed from 8th place to 4th place in attracting young adults ages 25 to 34. And our annual performance in that metric rose from 8% to 9.73%, reflecting the growing attractiveness to young talent in particular. And this is very important because we want to strengthen our workforce and strengthen the ability for our employers to recruit some of the top talent nationwide. And there's a few reasons why we are attractive for talent. First, we're a very business-friendly environment, and that's due to competitive corporate tax rates and the absence of a state income tax. And as you had mentioned earlier, our business establishment start rate increased year over year, now at 13%. And we rank in the top 5 of our comparison set in that metric. In addition, we have great weather and we have comparatively great air quality. So add to that a host of cultural and recreational attractions, and it's no wonder that Tampa Bay is on everyone's radar. And to really drive the point home, our crime rates are low, in fact, below the national average. And Tampa Bay is actually tied for first place in the total crime rate, low crime rates, with Jacksonville as the second metro as well. So there's lots of reasons why I think we are very attractive for residents wanting to stay here and residents wanting to move here.
I love that. And it's a good thing. And we should celebrate that. That's great news. That's great news for all of us to be excited about. And yet we turn to housing affordability, and that's been a front page news for our communities for years. It's only grown more prevalent now that we know from the report that families are spending 57 cents of every dollar they earn on just housing and transportation. That's before they ever have any food on the table. And that's up from 54 cents last year. How does the underlying data shed light on the key factors here?
So, you know, speaking about the things that make us attractive, on the other hand, that attractiveness does increase the demand for resources, meaning that there's greater pressure on our limited supply of housing and higher cost of living overall. So when we look at what households are earning in Tampa Bay, the average wage is near the bottom of our comparison set, and it is below the U.S. average by almost $10,000. So while our research shows that wages have been rising over the past few years, it is a modest increase compared to what we have been seeing in overall cost of living, particularly tied to housing, as you mentioned. When we look at the impact of the choices that residents have to make in terms of where they live relative to their work and how they use existing transportation, this becomes a greater issue. So speaking more to housing costs in particular, we're seeing greater net migration to counties that are further out from the urban core, with rates more than double those of the urban core counties. And this is also true when we look at the in-migration rate of 25 to 34-year-olds. They're choosing to live further and further out from their places of work. And what this does is it puts additional pressure on transportation. There's greater distances to be traveled, greater expenses tied to that travel, and greater strains on our existing infrastructure.
Yes, absolutely. And if you think about full-time work not necessarily being enough to make ends meet in this day and age, some may look at the contrast and think that the positives and negatives exist in a separate vacuum. There's positives over here, there's negatives over here. But you see a connectedness between the two. Talk about that.
Absolutely. You can actually think of this issue as a three-legged stool. You can't really just address housing affordability without also talking about transportation, as I mentioned, because where we live really depends on where it's affordable to live. And if it's more affordable further out, we do have to commute greater distances and we contribute to greater traffic. But when we look at average wages, that workforce development piece is also incredibly important, because if we have access to higher degree attainment, higher levels of credentialing, we also have access to higher pay. And so if we focus efforts on all three of those stool legs, where we say we're going to focus on mitigating some of the burdens of transportation, some of the costs associated with that, we're going to mitigate housing supply constraints, and we're also going to mitigate some of the barriers that allow for the opportunities for greater access to higher education, then you're really tackling the problem from all angles, which is the important part here.
Wonderful. So that leads me right into the Tampa Bay Partnership has been awarded two research grants. Congratulations.
To
activate around the housing affordability issue. So can you share more about that research?
Absolutely. So over the past few years, we have seen that our data is showing the growing crisis of housing affordability. And so in response to that, last year, we formed the Housing Affordability Task Force, led by your very own Jessica Muroff from United Way Suncoast and Carrie Petrino from Fifth Third Bank. And the task force was formed to assess the needs of the market and to search for potential solutions in unique ways in which the partnership can contribute. So as part of those efforts, we have these two ongoing research studies that are focused mainly on the Hillsborough, Pasco, and Pinellas County region as that urban core where the concentration of jobs are located and where we're seeing the greatest congestion and the greatest constraints to accessing those locations. So one of the studies, a $250,000 grant generously funded by JP Morgan Chase Foundation, will categorize affordable and attainable housing units currently available or under development based on different measures of area median income. So we don't want to just look at subsidized housing, and we don't want to look, even though it's critical that we do look at the lower ends of area median income, but also what we consider workforce housing options that can be upwards of that 80% to 140% of area median income. We're also going to assess any planned units and look at whether these developments align with the future needs of our workforce over the next 5 years. The other study is qualitative in nature. It's a $25,000 grant generously funded by the Duke Energy Foundation, and it looks at the multifaceted impact of the housing crisis on various stakeholders. So these would be income-constrained families, the nonprofits that serve them, local governments, housing agencies, employers, and even developers.
Wow, that's a lot. Is there a timeline for that, or when are we expecting those to be published?
Yes, so the Duke Energy Foundation grant will conclude this year. It has an end date of August 2024, and we hope to have results and the study ready for public consumption by the end of the year. The JP Morgan Chase Foundation grant, that was a 2-year grant. So because it does involve several phases, that should be concluding in August of 2025. And hopefully at the end of 2025, we'll see some results that we're also ready to share with the community at large.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. We all look forward to that. And thank you for taking the lead on that research. Let's talk about more about workforce development. What's the state of the talent pipeline in Tampa Bay?
So for the talent pipeline, I think it's most important to start with early learning. So we are seeing about 43% of our 3- and 4-year-olds enrolled in preschool. And this is incredibly important because if you're enrolled in a preschool program, you're much more likely to pass your kindergarten readiness test at the very beginning of your kindergarten year. And so we're seeing that those percentages of kindergartners passing their readiness tests are only coming in at just slightly over 50%. So we want to see those numbers increase. We want to see that kids are ready to learn from day one that they start school. And that means that we have to ensure that the year before or the 2 years before that they're starting school, they're learning some of those valuable skills that they'll use in kindergarten. In addition, our third grade reading scores reflect that just under 48% of our third graders are able to read at grade level. And the reason this is incredibly important is because through third grade, students are learning to read. But beyond third grade, students are reading to learn. So third grade reading is critical for success all the way through high school graduation. We are seeing much higher graduation rates for kids that are performing better in the earlier years through their academic career. But unfortunately, we are seeing declines in overall graduation rates. And most troubling, a big discrepancy between the high school graduation rates of the economically disadvantaged and the non-economically disadvantaged student population. It's actually more than a 12 percentage point difference in Tampa Bay.
Wow.
So in addition to that, we have about 11% of the population of 16 to 24-year-olds that are not engaged in school, nor are they at work. This is what we consider disconnected youth. And while that percentage fell slightly from the previous year, we still rank 16th out of 20th in our comparison set. So this is a wasted opportunity to develop skills at an early age, and it adversely affects our labor force participation rates.
Absolutely. I always think about it as if you're that fourth grader entering into fourth grade and you haven't gotten that skill down of learning to read, you start to look around and wonder, you know, do I belong here? Does this make sense? And that's where maybe those thoughts of dropping out come into play. So it's all connected. It's all connected.
And the problems just compound beyond that, right? If you're struggling in fourth grade, chances are that you're going to struggle in fifth grade and you become very disillusioned. And it's much more difficult to try to help with those intervention programs later on. They're much better to have them implemented in the earlier years.
Absolutely. It's not impossible to catch up, but why do we want students to have to catch up?
Right.
That's the area we want to live in. We want to live in an area where everybody has that equitable chance to succeed. So thank you for that and the focus and shining a light on those numbers. It's obviously something we care very much about as well at United Way Suncoast.
Yes.
The partnership loves to say, what gets measured gets done. And I added some of that emphasis for fun. How do you see our civic leaders take the findings of the regional competitiveness report to make a positive difference?
So that is a big area for the partnership, right? We want to advocate on the issues that our data is revealing to us. Year over year, we're not moving the needle or not moving the needle enough on these issues. So over the last year, the partnership has supported legislation that encouraged private sector investment in early education and childcare. We also sought to improve childcare affordability and access for Tampa Bay's working families. So this correlates right along with that talent pipeline. We're going to continue to struggle with labor force participation rates, with hiring and retaining talent, if we don't address also childcare availability and childcare costs. So these are two areas that also fit very closely together. There were many positive results from this legislative session that we supported. One was the inclusion of the childcare tax credit provisions into the tax package. And another was the inclusion of policy language in the budget package that established a sliding fee scale for families earning above the income threshold. So this expanded access and affordability for many families. And that's what we do at the partnership, is we look at the data, we research it, and we come up with solutions that are actionable and able to be implemented, even if not to the fullest extent in the first year, at least moving in that direction towards the right solutions for Tampa Bay.
Absolutely. So if somebody wants to get involved with the Tampa Bay Partnership, remind us of the areas that you cover and how they would go about doing that.
So the Tampa Bay Partnership is an 8-county focused institution. So we begin in Citrus County in the north, and then we go all the way to Sarasota County in the south. We do go into Polk County in the east. So those 8 counties that largely reflect the greater Tampa Bay area. We're a coalition of regional business and nonprofit leaders, and we represent more than 120,000 employees. So absolutely reach out to us if you are a business leader in the area and you are interested in making a difference.
Yes, absolutely. We can't just talk about the difference we want to see. We got to get in the game. So do you have any final thoughts on how what you'd like to leave our audience with?
Sure. So the closing thought really is that we would like to see a lot of organizations begin to use our data in their strategic areas. If we can facilitate moving that needle because the data resources are ready and they're available for use, that's what we do. So please visit us at stateoftheregion.com and you can access any of our 67 metrics. You can drill down by the county level and where demographic data is available. You'll also be able to find it there at the county level. But really the main idea here is that we have amazing organizations doing valuable work in Tampa Bay. And my hope is that our data just becomes a tool for all of these organizations to set priorities and to be able to get their message out with one stronger voice. Because when we have many voices uniting around that shared message, we have an increased likelihood of being heard at the state and federal level. And to me, that has the power to generate transformational changes for Tampa Bay.
That's a beautiful ending. Dr. Ferris, it's been a pleasure to have you on the Freedom to Rise podcast. Thank you so much. And please, if you just heard something that sparks your interest, make sure that you get connected with the Tampa Bay Partnership.
Thank you so much.
And now it's time for the big takeaway. United Way Suncoast utilizes a simulation exercise called Meet the Johnsons. We've implemented a special event with the Foundation for a Healthy St. Petersburg, and more recently, we guided a group of supporters through the experience. Borrowed from our friends at United Way of Volusia and Flagler County, Meet the Johnsons helps our broader community understand the challenges a family of four could face in any given month. I won't give away the intricacies of the exercise, but transportation and housing are major factors. How could they not be? We focus a lot on education at United Way Suncoast, yet we remain cognizant of how transportation and housing can impact a family's ability to overcome barriers and gain economic mobility. As we mentioned earlier, the Tampa Bay Partnership's Regional Competitiveness Report revealed that families are spending 57 cents of every dollar they earn on transportation and housing. Think about that. It's a number that we hope has caught the attention of our elected officials. As Tampa Bay Rays President and Tampa Bay Partnership Chair Brian Auld noted earlier this year, transportation, housing, and education are not partisan issues. They're people issues. For people who live through these challenges, real families of four, like our fictitious Johnson clan, let's hope that our elected leaders can find common ground and a clear path to improvement. Because if we're going to drive the region to higher ratings, we'll have to come together and embrace that united we rise, united we win. Onwards.